That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Lafondra looking to get close side of Font. Lafondra away from David. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Welcome to what is the final Elm Park Royal preview podcast of the season in association with the Reading Chronicle. I'm here as always with Matt Joy. How are you, Matt? How's your week been?
Yes, my week's been very good, thank you, mate. Perhaps the week in general has probably been a little bit better than last Saturday was, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the best game in the world, but it was definitely a performance where one team could be crowned champions and the other one didn't have much to play for.
Yeah, and full credit to Norwich. I mean, they were second half, they were absolutely brilliant. There's no other way of describing it. They ran Reading ragged. And, you know, looked absolutely worthy of their spot in the league, and full credit to them for that. Reading started brightly, but Norwich just stepped it up a gear, and my word, did they. You know, they were brilliant. And, yeah, it was just a case of one team had the wind in their sails, one team didn't have much of a reason to have the wind in their sails, and ultimately that led to the final scoreline.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered the social media boycott kind of extensively on this podcast, so we won't go back into it too much, but it must have been a bit weird for you not having to do that much during the game.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's one of the most enjoyable parts I find on a match day is, you know, the interaction that I have with supporters, and, you know, you put out questions or you put out this and that, and I think there's a good sort of community feel on the Reading FC hashtag. Unless I, you know, maybe occasionally put a slightly unpopular opinion on, but no, normally it's, you know, very good natured, and I'd sit there and I'd, you know, laugh away in the press box at some of the tweets I get. So it was quieter. Yeah, I had much less to do. I started the live blog and it was kind of like, right now, what do I have to do? Oh, nothing. You know, it was a strange atmosphere sort of around the press box as well. I think we were all sort of twiddling our thumbs a little bit. But as, you know, as we said, I think it was a worthwhile exercise and hopefully it will make some difference down the line. But yeah, a strange afternoon it was, all in all.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously hosting the post-match pod, and not being able to get iFollow working for the first half hour was a little bit stressful. But I assume you got a bit better view of it from your seat at the ground. We played all right in the first half, I thought, up until, well, we fell apart in the second.
Yeah, I think Norwich started a little slowly. I think Reading perhaps surprised them with especially the pressing play in the early stages. Maybe the first quarter of the game was really, really good. The link-up play between Elise, Swift and Ajari, I thought, was really, really effective. But I think it was a case of when Norwich got the wind in their sails, they just were a level above. And, okay, Reading didn't, you know, up their game. But I think even if Reading had kept that performance level up throughout the whole game, it would have been a surprise to me to see us come away with anything, because, you know, some of the players that, especially Emi Buendia, I mean, my word, what a player he is. He's just a joy to watch, and, you know, you'd be a fool to admit otherwise. He was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, Quintilla's goal was fantastic. Okay, a couple of the goals I was less than impressed with the defensive efforts on, but when we concede four, and I think I gave Raphael some of the highest marks in terms of my ratings, that says a lot, because I think Raphael had a great game. It could have been a cricket score without him. So, yeah, it was perhaps one that if you didn't manage to get all of the 90 minutes on iFollow, you didn't necessarily miss a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I managed to see the goal, so that was the one bright point. It's a bit disappointing in the sense that Tom Holmes has been really good since he came in, and then obviously had two big mistakes in that match. But if he's going to make a mistake, I'd rather he make it now than at the beginning of next season when it actually makes a difference.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I gave him a very low rating, but that's not in any way a reflection of his performance in general. I think he's been brilliant in his first real season in the squad. He's settled in seamlessly. He shows his versatility. He can play, you know, in the fullback role. He can play at centre half, and he's done a good job for the majority of the games that he's been in that spot. He's been thrown in at the deep end. I think even the most experienced of players would have struggled to deal with the attacking quality that Norwich had on display, but I don't think he was particularly helped by Lewis Gibson, who I thought had a bit of a ropey afternoon as well. But it, as you said, in games that don't necessarily matter as much, that's when you want the mistakes to come.
Yeah, I think it's going to be different this weekend because that's a complete dead rubber. Norwich obviously still had something to play for. So I don't really put too much emphasis on that game at all. The only thing that was kind of interesting to see was Dejan Tetek starting. I called it last week. Well, not quite, but I did say he might be nearer the first team. Do we know whether that was because of an injury to Rinno? Because he didn't even make the bench.
Yeah, Rinomota was out injured last week, as was Liam Moore. But I think Tetek slipped, you know, came into the side and put in a really good show. And I think he didn't look out of place at all. He looked confident in possession. He clearly had a job to do to try and nullify the attacking quality that Norwich had, and he did that relatively well. I thought he didn't look out of place at all. He was, you know, tenacious in the tackle. He, as Panovic said yesterday in an interview with him, I think he said that he ran nearly 10 kilometres, whereas the average for the team was, he said 7, but then he corrected that after the interview, but it was a little bit too late for me to tweet that out. And to be honest, there's bigger issues in the world. So it was actually 8 kilometres, the average, but he was, you know, going above that mark. And yeah, it's signs of promise, definitely. And I think he'll be a player that will, of all the, you know, the young lads coming through, I think he'll be the one that's perhaps the likeliest to make a real impression on the first team looking ahead to next season.
Yeah, I mean, he was involved in that goal. He kind of was overlapping on the right-hand side, won the foul, won the ball back initially. So, you know, promising signs. Do we know whether he's under contract for next year? Because I think in some places he's down as having it expired over the summer.
I believe he is. And I think that the fact that, you know, Panovic has talked him up in the press would certainly suggest that he is. I think he's definitely being outlined as one for the future. And, you know, who knows, this time next year, we could be talking about him as a, you know, your next, obviously not in the same ilk of, you know, a Michael Olise, but he could have that breakthrough season and we could be thinking, OK, that's the next in a long line on the Reading FC Academy conveyor belt.
Yeah, and that moves us nicely on to Michael Olise's award this week for the EFL Young Player. He thoroughly deserves it. I mean, he's been incredible all season. I think he's come up big in some moments where we needed him, particularly like away at QPR and at home to Millwall. Still away to Millwall. But yeah, I mean, what hasn't been said that could be said about Michael Olise? I'm not sure there's that much, but he's been special this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most difficult question you've asked me since you've taken on board the presenting role. What hasn't been said about him? No, he's been absolutely fantastic. He's a joy to watch. He glides around the pitch. I mean, not in the same calibre, but, you know, the comparisons or the comments about Phil Foden in the Champions League, how he just, you know, he looks like he's on ice skates sometimes on the pitch. He's so seamless in his movement. He's confident. He always seems to have his head up and he makes the right passes. He's scored some fantastic and very important goals. He's delivered some brilliant set pieces, as we saw against Norwich, especially most recently for Josh Lawrence's goal. And he is a man that will go to the very top. I have no doubt about that. I think there are certain players who come through the Reading Academy that you think they're destined for at least, you know, a solid Premier League career. Gylfie Sigurdsson's obviously the main one that comes to mind. I would have absolutely no doubts about Michael Olise doing exactly the same thing. I think if he continues on his career trajectory, he could be at the very top of the game. And he's a special, special talent. But quite interestingly, Veljko Panovic yesterday said he highlighted plenty of things that he can improve upon, which was quite interesting. He said, you know, fully deserving of the Young Player Award, but he talked about his mindset, which was quite interesting. He said that, you know, if he doesn't put in the perfect performance, he can get a bit dejected and he can perhaps focus too much on that, and that might have implications on the team. So he just wants him to be a little bit better at dealing with adversity in certain situations and maybe in a run of form. But by all means, if he can do that and, you know, show a bit more, he said, do the ugly stuff a little bit better as well. My word, what a talent he could be in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can spin that in a semi-positive way as well, his mindset, in that you always hear about these big players who just, are never satisfied. And I think it was like the Last Dance documentary about Michael Jordan. Like, he's so hard on himself and the people around him, but that's what makes him a great player. And maybe Elise I'm not sure he'll become Michael Jordan calibers of in football, but you know, he's clearly got that next step. And I don't expect to see him lining up in a Reading shirt next season. Let's put it that way.
It would be a very, very, very welcome surprise, I'd say. I think he'll have suitors from around the country and probably around the continent as well. I mean, I must admit the Michael Jordan comparison's kind of lost on me because I refused to watch that documentary. I just felt it was a complete advert of Michael Jordan. But apart from that, that's me in the minority there, I'm sure. But no, he's destined for the very top. And to be honest, if Pavlovic came out and said, you know, what do you think of the award? And he just listed, this is what he's brilliant at and he's got no drawbacks. You kind of just think, okay, well, you can't, that's a bit, it's good to see that Pavlovic is, you know, he has demands for his players and he has areas that even if they have reached very high heights this year, he wants them to continue that and improve on that. And that is, as you said, what the great players, how they start their career and you know, where they get to. All of that is done through picking out the areas in their individual game that can be improved upon and, you know, doing just that. So, yeah, as you said, it would be a joy to have another season of watching him. But if a move came up for him that, you know, could allow him to make the next step in the career, I don't think anyone would be able to begrudge him that. I think he's been a great servant for Reading this season. He's got us out of a lot of tricky spots and, you know, he's fully deserving of the success that is probably going to come his way in the next few seasons.
Yeah, I mean, agree with everything you've said. You managed to find something that hasn't been said about him. Well done.
Thank you.
So rather than doing a like full preview pod for, as I say, a game that doesn't really matter, me and Matt are just going to, or Matt and I, my brother would be so angry at me, are going to just talk through the season and what's went well and what hasn't quite lived up to expectations. I mean, it is a very difficult season to kind of summarise in one line. I won't ask you to do that. How about summarising the opening 8 games in one line?
I could do it in 3 words. I could just say what is happening, because that was pretty much my sort of thoughts. I mean, as a few of my colleagues will know that when I was coming back from games each week and we were talking on the Monday and it was like, I don't know what's going on. This doesn't happen to Reading. We don't, you know, we don't bewilder expectations, or we haven't since 2005, 2006, really. It was an absolutely astounding start, and it was an absolute pleasure to be there to enjoy it, because it was just like, wow. I mean, there's so many superlatives I could get, but just on a raw kind of emotional level, I was just so impressed and excited. I thought this is a team that are outperforming expectations and doing so comfortably. It looked as if they'd reached that next level, but it was just little tweaks in their approach, little tweaks in the tactics, and you know, having the majority of the players who are, you know, exactly the same, with the exception of, you know, perhaps Josh Laurent. It was it was really, really surprising. But then, you know, it wasn't going to end like that. It wasn't going to carry on like that for 46 games. And it was a case of, I'm just going to not question it and enjoy it for as long as we can. But yeah, I think as soon as the injury started to mount up, I think that's when we saw the first sort of cracks in the armoury showing.
Yeah, I think the thing that gets lost about those first 8 games is everyone going on about how clinical we were. And sure, like, we were at an insanely high conversion rate, but defensively, I don't think we ever really looked troubled. I thought that we looked absolutely solid, and that was reflected in both the actual goal numbers against and the XG against, which, you know, we won't go too much into that. I know Reading fans don't like that. That's fine. But yeah, as you say, then the injuries start picking up. I can't remember if Moore was out during that next stretch or whether it was the stretch just down the line. And Belko kind of mentioned this in the talk that you had with him yesterday. Even he was surprised by how well we started, but the injuries were kind of the killer blow in many ways to the rest of the season.
Well, I think, yeah, it really disrupted the momentum. And you look at the players who have been out the longest. You look at, you know, John Swift. Yeardom's been out for lengthy spells. Yaku Mate. All of these players are players that are the, you know, the key cogs in this Reading, you know, the core group of players. And to lose players like that is obviously going to disrupt the flow. I mean, you just look at Swift on the opening day of the season. I remember being at Pride Park, and it was hysterical because we were surrounded. I was surrounded by Derby, you know, journalists and people who looked at the Reading team and thought they've got a nothing manager. They've finished nowhere last year. And we completely blew them away. And some of the attacking, you know, quality on display in that first game, it was just, I just remember driving home with a beaming smile on my face because it was just like, it completely astounded me. But yeah, then the injuries picked up. And unfortunately, Reading weren't blessed with, the strength in depth. And Paunovic certainly said a lot of interesting stuff about the financial restrictions that have been looming over the club this year and may possibly loom in the coming summer transfer window. But that was the killer. There was there were games where Reading could barely fill a bench with, well, their bench, you know, wouldn't have been a bench that would have been replicated among other, you know, top six sides in the division. They would have had stronger benches, and that's no disrespect to some of the younger lads. They just didn't have the experience. So that was the real disrupting influence on such a brilliant start.
Yeah, I also think that first eight games, we were slightly lucky looking back at the kind of run that we had. In the first few games, we played Derby, who haven't gone on to do anything, Barnsley, Wickham, Rotherham. But there were also good wins against kind of Blackburn and Watford. So, it kind of swings and roundabouts, I guess. But the problem with this season seems to have been closing out games that maybe we should have won. So I'm thinking of that Sheffield Wednesday away game where, okay, the ref might have got a bit involved, but realistically, I know. When we're playing against, it was only 10, wasn't it? But it felt like,
yes,
it felt like we were playing against about 8, the way that they were defending. I don't want to say Zhao's missed penalties, but they have cost us some points. It's that killer instinct in those kind of games that we've kind of lacked a bit.
Yeah, and again, Paunovic referenced, we were talking about what games you thought were the turning points and what have you. And, they went through the season chronologically, but one that sticks in my mind without having, an hour plus of audio next to me that I can immediately recite off the top of my head. He did mention, Zhao's miss against Barnsley, for example. I think if that had gone in, Reading had won that game. The feeling around the squad, the confidence, the optimism would have been different, the last few games of the season with such difficult games on paper perhaps would have yielded more points, and we could be sitting here looking forward to a playoff semi-final. But that being said, as we've referenced many times, without Zhao's goals in the first place, we'd be nowhere near where we ended up finishing. So by no means do I want to single out anyone. It was finishing off games, and I think more recently you look at the Wickham away, you look at Birmingham away, that swagger at the start of the season of, we can go and we can beat anyone, and we need to be, or we can just, take the game to oppositions. And if you can display that at the start of the campaign, to then go to, Adams Park and you look just like a rabbit in the headlights for periods of the game, that's not what you would have expected at the start of the season. You'd have expected Reading to have that, that feeling of we are better than them, because, on paper we are. So that's the frustrating thing. I think not necessarily even closing out games. I think it's just been the games where you just think there should have been more of a buoyancy, more of a spring in the step, and there hasn't been. And whether that's the manager's instructions maybe being a bit too cautious, whether that's a lack of belief in the players, I would doubt. It's probably a combination of a lot of things, but that's probably for me what I look back on and feel that Reading could have really improved upon.
See, I find it really interesting that you bring up those two games, because Wickham at home, which we did win and I think was in that first eight, even that felt like a struggle to me. But because you're on that kind of winning run, you almost forget that. Like, I think it took more long ball and a piece of sublime skill from Zhao, and we only win that 1-0. And then Birmingham at home again. That's I think that's one where Zhao misses a penalty, and we lose 2-1. And again, that doesn't feel quite as, you know, end of the world as in the run-in, where the exact same scoreline, like exact same almost everything. But obviously that at that point we needed to pick up points. So I think maybe sometimes scorelines have deceived with Reading, and both ways as well. I think there's games where we've lost, where we've looked better, and even Sky were bringing that up in the early run where we started losing.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And as you touched upon, I think, you know, you look at the Wickham performance, and that's, you know, in a run that yielded a lot of points. But then you look at, I think it was kind of, you had one eye on the games that were coming at the end of the year. You had that eye on, oh my word, it's a tough run-in, and these are the games that perhaps that was, you know, looming on the players' minds as well in the nature of the performances. I mean, Birmingham at home, yeah, it was a frustrating display, but then perhaps Birmingham away, it was, this is an absolute must-win because all the expectations on us. They had Lee Bowyer's, I think it was his first managerial, first game in charge. And yeah, it's a very good point. And there has been games where Reading have been, you know, by far and away the better side, but it's just been little spells. I mean, you look at the Bournemouth away, Reading were really good in the opening half, and then it was a complete capitulation after the break. You know, Watford away, okay, we were a couple of goals down at the break, but arguably should have been, you know, 2-2. And you come out after the break and it was just not really there. So yeah, I think we could sit here and dissect this for hours upon end, because there's no, you know, right or wrong answer. I think there's been so many things that you could, you know, pin a solid case on that have disrupted the flow of the season. But ultimately, it's been an amalgamation of a lot of things.
Yeah. So you kind of, I think you mentioned earlier that, like, the lack of squad depth, the fact that we couldn't really bring anyone in over January, like Panovic has touched on that a few times now. Mm. What do we think we need to do going forward into next year to go one better? One place higher would be perfect.
Mm. Yeah. I think in terms of your playing staff, I think, again, Panovic touched on this, just having a bit more experience to call upon. I think having players who maybe might not be, you know, the most technically gifted, but have that experience in game management. Perhaps players who've been in the league, you know, for half a decade, let's say, because sometimes maybe Reading will be the goal up and you look upon the bench and it's been a case of, okay, there's a lot of youngsters on there. You need, you know, not calm heads, but you just need someone who, you know, they're smart. They can get into positions, they can draw fouls, they can do whatever's needed to just eat up the seconds. But depth, I think, is first and foremost, that's the main thing for Reading. And depth in terms of not just having, you know, seven players that can fill out a bench, having players on the bench who have kind of proven themselves in this league and can do a job. And whether that's a case of having to dip into, you know, free transfers or loans, perhaps. I would like to see perhaps the average age of the squad go up a little bit, because I think it's very all well and good having a young and exciting squad in terms of some of the key men as well. But you just think that Reading could have, it could also help, you know, some of the younger players coming through and help them, you know, get to that next level, learn a bit more about the league, understand the expectations a little bit more. So yeah, just perhaps a little bit more strength in depth and a little bit more tactical nous and experience, I would say.
I think the interesting thing about average age is, I do think it gets touched upon a bit too much. Like when you look at Barnsley, their average age, I think, is even younger than ours. But the difference is some of those players have been given like a couple of seasons to develop. And okay, they've gone down and come back up and still stuck with those players. And that's really helped them. So hopefully, you know, kind of moving on from this, that can kind of start to develop within our own players too. Yeah. Are we expecting that there will be a kind of change in tactics if Panovic can bring in his own sort of style of player?
I wouldn't necessarily say so. I think that Panovic has got quite a set way he likes to play. And I think it's yielded the rewards when he's got the, you know, the players on the pitch who can pull it off. So yeah, no, I would. Short answer this time, which is rare for me, but no, I'd say that I'd expect a very similar tactical setup next year.
Yeah, I think the only thing that might happen is we play with like proper wingers and have that bit extra width, I would imagine, anyway.
Mm. Yeah, and that may not go against Reading. I think that's something I would like to see a bit of improvement upon is a delivery from, because, you know, there's so many times you get into the areas, and anyone who follows me on Twitter will know my thoughts on our corner taking prowess in recent weeks. It's been a lot of corners and pretty much none of them I've ever sat there and thought, oh, here's a chance. I've just been like, well, is this gonna hit the first man? Is this gonna be headed out? It's pretty much that's how it's felt. So there needs to be a bit more from those areas, and as you said, from the wide areas, because when, you know, you Reading have exploited the wide areas and some of the goals and some of the chances we've seen, especially between like Mete and Zhao, when they've had perhaps only a couple of defenders to take on, and they've been able to play those quick passes to get into those areas, it has yielded success. And that would be an area that you would feel that Reading can have joy in if they get maybe one or two new men in.
Yeah, as a bit of an aside, I think that Michael Morrison being out injured has really affected our corners, because towards the beginning of the season, he was the target almost every time. And taking him away doesn't really feel like we've got that same kind of, I don't, killer instinct feels like such a weird word to use with Michael Morrison, but I think that is probably it.
I'm sure he'd be delighted for you to call it that. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, it just seems like there's no, I don't know what the word is, but there's no kind of routine. You don't feel like there's a routine. It's just try and hit the area and kind of, it's a hit and hope. That's how, yeah, I feel.
I think I did feel like we had that in those first eight games. I don't know if teams just worked out or whether something, I don't know what went wrong, but yeah, it doesn't feel like we've been making the most of those situations recently. But yeah, we're talking as if Velko is 100% going to be here next year. In the interview that you and others did with him yesterday, he didn't sound quite so confident.
Yeah, I'm going to just read out this quote because I think it's important for me to get. It's obviously a very important issue, and I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to just read out what exactly he said when asked upon whether he will be, you know, the man in charge. He said, first of all, I would like to thank everyone who wants me to continue. I want to thank the ownership who has given me the opportunity and let me finish the season at least. Moving forward, I do not know the answer of whether I'm going to be here, but I definitely want to be. And then he talks about preparations being made, i.e. Plans to go to Scotland in pre-season, and how they're planning to cope with the players' fitness and, you know, getting their rest correct after such a long and arduous campaign. So, but yeah, the bulk of it is he wants to be here, but there's not a concrete, there's no concrete facts as, yes, I've been given 100% assurances that I will be in the hot seat next season, which is disappointing, I think. We touched upon this as we were just chatting before we hit the record button. Of all the, you know, the sackings that have gone on in recent years, there's been a bit of a merry-go-round in the last kind of 10 years or so. But most of them have been deserved. I think most of them, the managers had run their course. Gomez, Clement, Stephen Stam after getting to the playoff final, I think it was a bit of a different case, and there was a lot of extenuating circumstances. Obviously, it was in the pandemic, there was a lot of it, you know, on those you could say, yeah, there was either progress made that rapidly, you know, backtracked, or there was a lack of progress made. With Paunovic, there has been obvious progress just based on league positioning. Okay, it's not finished the way that we would have all loved it to, but to consider sacking someone who's got within, you know, three or four games, you could probably argue, of a shot at the Premier League is baffling to me, because there's a lot of good squads in this division that are probably, there's a lot of talented squads who could arguably match Reading squads on paper who aren't even in the top 12, I'd say. You know, there's Paunovic has done, and it's his first season in, you know, in English football. He's come in, it's an entirely new environment. He's not had the ability to engage with supporters. He's not had all the bonuses of, you know, the when Reading are on a good run of having a buoyant crowd behind him. There's been so many drawbacks that he's had to face, the financial pressures, the injuries. And he's made mistakes, but as I said, it's his first season in this country, in this league. And if I would say maybe halfway through next season, if those errors are still there and Reading's league positioning is less than impressive, and you know, it's any progress that he has made has stalled, then it might be a time for me to perhaps look and think, is he the right man going forward? But any suggestions that at the moment he's not is just baffling to me.
Yeah, I think the fact that people see sort of similarities to Bowen in the fact that he had that initial bounce and then has tailed off. But I don't, and I don't want to be too mean, but I don't hate watching the football in the way that I did when I was watching Mark Bowen at some points, or Mark Bowen's team. I wasn't just watching Mark Bowen and hating.
That's probably why you didn't get much enjoyment if you were just staring at
the dugout. Yeah, I mean, I think that there are clear plans that may not have been there with other managers. And as you say, like when you compare the start, like the expectations at the start of the season to where we have ended up, he has exceeded the fans' expectations. Whether he's exceeded the owners is like a whole different kettle of fish. And also what he promised the owners that he would be able to do, I don't know what that is. But yeah, I if Elko isn't in charge in whenever preseason is this year, I would both be pretty shocked and pretty disappointed.
Yeah, and I think it's a case of be careful what you wish for, because if you look at, okay, you know, the nature of football is you have a lot of managers chopping and changing, you know, after seasons and what have you. But if you look at the managers who are available on the market at the moment, I'll be honest, none come to mind that I could think I would rather have X and Y than Pavlovic. I mean, it's just, it's kind of what next? And what do you expect? If you've given Pavlovic an opportunity to, you know, bring his own coaching staff in to get his methods of, you know, his methods of football and his, how he wants to run the club. You've given him a year to do that in the hardest year that you could possibly ask a manager to cope with, based on all the factors I've just mentioned on and off the pitch and in society in general. And he's finished seventh with a squad that's more or less the same than a squad that finished in the, you know, the lower reaches and has finished in the lower reaches in seasons gone by. It would just be completely nonsensical to replace him. And obviously football is a game predominantly, you know, thought of with a lot of emotional baggage to it. And there's a lot of disappointment with how the season's panned out at the end. And like I said, there's ample ways and ample justification for criticising some of his decisions. But to question his whether he's the right man is a complete over-exaggeration, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of managers available, I've heard one, Jose Gomez, just became unattached. I only jest. I think that's a rather good place to leave it. So for this episode and for this year, thank you very much, Matt. I don't know when we'll be back, but I'm assuming we'll be back at some point.
Touch wood, mate. It's been a very enjoyable doing this for the whole season and having the opportunity to vent in a slightly less formal way than I am able to on my own platforms. And, you know, I hope that anyone who's listened over this campaign has enjoyed my musings, we should say. And yeah, thank you to everyone on your side of it who've given me the opportunity to have a good old natter every week. It's been something I've thoroughly enjoyed.
Well, you know, I also give thanks to those people for allowing me to do the exact same thing. So, yeah, thanks everyone for listening. I think the watch along is back this weekend, if you can be bothered to watch. No, obviously do watch. It's the last one of the year. Come on, let's get hyped for it. And then we'll be back at some point in the new season.